not only a staggering performance from our president, Johnny Barclay, but a truly staggering performance. It seemed to be off the cuff from one of the truly great cricketers of any era. Imran Khan, ladies and gentlemen, come back to the stage. Fantastic. Well done. You have a seat there. We're going to hear a little bit more from Imran as he joins our panel this evening. We have, not necessarily in his honour, though it is ideally suited that he's with us this evening, we're going to focus exclusively on fast bowling and fast bowlers. Before we do that, this is a special evening for somebody else who's part of our panel and captured our imagination during this past 18 months. First during the Ashes series, and then in South Africa, when it was, ironically, with the bat that we became glued to television screens from South Africa as he held on to save us test matches. Well, he's been voted as one of the Wisden Cricketers of the Year for 2010, and the MCC's long association with Wisden is confirmed this evening because this is the first opportunity that anybody has had to give him his whatever it is, his recognition or his prize, which is this marvellously leather-bound edition of the famous almanac. Let me read you what the editor, Shil Berry, had to say. Graham Onions is one of the five cricketers of the year, partly for his role in propelling Durham to their attention of the county championship with 40 wickets in the first five games of the season. Moreover, for his role in beefing up England's seam bowling last summer with 10 wickets in each of his two test series against West Indies and Australia. In all, he became the first bowler, along with Steve Harmison, since Locke and Laker in 56, to propel his county to a retention of the championship and his country to the Ashes. Ladies and gentlemen, Graham Onions. And that's for you to present to him. And Imran will do the duty.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed watching you. Only much. One test, I haven't seen much of you. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you very much. Do you want to go next to Imran there? Yeah. Sure. Well done. Good to see you. Good to see you. Out on the wings there, the quiet man. Our next guest was in our consciousness perhaps far more than any of us knew when we watched him at Lord's against Bangladesh just, 6 or 7 weeks ago. He actually first played for Middlesex, would you believe this, in 2005, so these things don't happen overnight. He did so at the youngest age of any cricketer to play for Middlesex. He took 9 wickets in the Lord's Test here against Bangladesh. And if what we saw in those two Test matches is what we're going to see for years to come, England are very lucky indeed. Stephen Finn. Well done. Well done. Glad to see you over. And ladies and gentlemen, conclusively not least, but in this instance last, a man who is most famous for making most of us hide behind our sofas in 1974-75, because for the first time the BBC brought highlights back to England from a test series in Australia, considered highlights rather than snippets off the news. We'd seen cricket through the 50s, 60s, and obviously Raymond Illingworth's successful side, which John Snow helped to win the Ashes with in 1971. But in 74-5, we really got proper highlights, and we really got terrified, because nobody had emerged in the game of cricket, with the possible exception of Larwood and then maybe Tyson, with quite the impact of the incomparable Geoff Thompson. Well done. So, what did you say to Colin Cowdery when he walked out to bat in Perth? I think we'll get straight into it, hey, with the spirit of cricket lecture. Colin Cowdery is 42. He's called out of the English winter. English batsmen have been laid to waste by Lillian Thompson. If Lily don't get you, then Tomo must, on the ashes to ashes, dust to dust theme. So he comes to the crease. He's not a young man anymore. Remember the family are in the room, Tomo?
The thing is, I know most of the family. No, but no. It's just one of those things, you know. You just do it, and I don't know why I'm here for the spirit of cricket. No, it's but he did come out. I still remember, I'll remember it till the day I die, with a little hat on and that, and he had the pear-shaped body then. I mean, I'm being serious. You know, he's 42 year old, you know, and he'd gone to a bit of a teardrop, you know, sort of thing. And and I just wonder where he's going, you know, and he walked past the umpire and went to meet me, who's about to bowl, and I'm revved up, just want to kill somebody, you know. And I thought, what's this bloke done? And he's gone. He said, Mr. Thompson, I believe. He said, it's so good to meet you. And I can't really tell you what I said, but the words sort of were, that's not going to help your fat say piss off, you know. So, I'm sorry about that, but, you know, I did improve after that.
You mentioned, and I think we're all taken with just about everything you said, Imi, but fairness is obviously something that applies to life as much as cricket. Fast bowlers have always had a word or two to say. I mean, I can't imagine that there's been the odd very quiet one, a sort of a silent assassin, but essentially fast bowlers have had something to say. That's fair enough. That's within the game, is it? The spirit of the game?
Well, you know, just the amount of energy that the fast bowler is running all that way and bowling, and it's an aggressive act. You don't have meek fast bowlers. In fact, you only become a fast bowler if you have aggression in you. If you don't have aggression, you can't become a fast bowler. So your character is such that you are, you know, you're aggressive, and then when something happens from the other side, a batsman hits you, or you think you've got him out and he hasn't been given out. So obviously words are exchanged in the heat of the moment. But I think that's very much with the spirit of the game, because then it's up to the batsman to then respond. And some batsmen, like Viv Richards, you know, he would go after you. But I think where it's planned sledging, you know, where you plan it and then you go in and sort of say awful things to people, I disagree with that. I think heat of the moment, words exchange is different to where you actually go and, you know, plan in the dressing room and then say awful things to people.
I liked Graham and Steve. I liked what Chris Broad, the match referee, had to say about Mohammed Amir the other day. There was a bit of a set too with Ricky Ponting, and Chris Broad looked into it, and he sort of appreciated that there had to be a red-blooded element to fast bowling, and that he was a young guy. He said maybe he's got a little bit to learn about how to conduct himself generally, but basically we don't want to take the aggression out of young people. Would you judge, and backing on from what Imran said, judge that generally match refereeing and umpiring is pretty fair? Are you happy with your lot?
Yeah, definitely. I think the umpiring these days is absolutely fantastic. I think it's really good. They're honest. They tell you why wasn't it out? Tell me why. And of course you get angry. You feel as though you want to blow a fuse. But they tell you they're honest. They're bringing new rules. Whether or not these rules are going to come in, you know, when I was younger, I used to just blow the fuse all the time. I used to get the ball, throw it at the batsman, and I used to do all that stuff. And that. I'd be kicked out of the game if that went on now. But those type of things used to happen. And someone like me making my debut, you know, that morning at Edgbaston, now I got two wickets and two balls. And I remember that day now. If someone accidentally runs into one of the best players in the world, Ricky Ponting wasn't very happy. Of course he's not. But he's got to understand that this guy's 17 or 18 year old and he's going to be a phenomenal cricketer. And he's... It's the love of the game, the passion for the game, and fair enough, he maybe couldn't have done that, but you could see the pleasure on his face to get him out.
Yeah. Do you think we talked to Imran talked a bit about English umpires, or just touched on them earlier? I mean, you've come across English umpires in the domestic game, but does the same thing apply to the neutral umpires all around the world? Do you think they're doing a terrific job?
I think they all do a great job. They've got a very hard job. I think during the heat of the moment, you obviously. In South Africa, it was my first chance to sample the Hawkeye or the new umpire and regulations. And of course, as a fast bowler, you think, well, if it's just clipping the stumps, you think it's out. Of course you do. But you've got to respect their decision. And I think the travelling that they do and the amount of pressure that they're under, I honestly think that they do a great job.
Steve, you looked angry at Lords at times. Yeah, almost as if someone said he's Glenn McGrath. I'm not sure you want to be Glenn McGrath except as a performer, but you obviously enjoyed the experience. Was there ever a moment you thought you might get carried away and suddenly thought all the cameras are on you?
Yeah, there was a couple of times. where the emotion nearly got the better of me. In Bangladesh, a couple of times, a fella hit me back past me for four to get his 100, and I sort of followed him afterwards, told him he's rubbish, even though he scored 100. And, you know, and you know, that's the way it goes. That's the game that we play. And as fast bowlers, yeah, you know, I was having a conversation earlier with Angus Fraser, and we were talking about, like, just about thinking about cricket. And I was saying, Gus, I'm thinking this, I'm thinking that. He went, Finney, don't think. Fast bowlers don't think, mate. Like, he said, you just get on with it. You bowl the ball, put a ball on a length, don't even think about it, mate, and you'll be all right. So once you get going and you're bowling, you know, you tend not to think. You know, it's not a good thing, but when you're bowling well, you don't think about much, and things just happen. And when things happen spur of the moment, like, you know, that's just the way it goes.
All right, now, when you're bowling well, you don't think about match. Let's open that up then. Are fast bowlers born, or can they be made, Tomo?
I think they're born. I think you, as a kid, most of the guys here, I don't know what they were like when they were younger, but Imran, the whole deal, you just want to do good. You want to bowl quicker than the other kids. I used to play against kids that somebody else would say to me in another district, oh, this kid can bowl quick, and I couldn't wait to play him. I was just going to dish him up, you know, so they had shown what I could do, you know, and that's what you've got to do. You've got to set challenges, goals for yourself and all that, and you've got to want to bowl fast. Like Imran said, it's not an easy trade. It's the hardest thing in the world. Not the hardest thing in the world, but it's really tough. And unless you're tough, you shouldn't be there, you know. And that's, I'll just hit on Tate, our bloke Tate at the moment. He's honest with himself. He says he can't bowl test matches. He only lasts a couple of overs. He bowls two over spells. Jesus, I think all of us here. If I bowled two over spells, I'd be an alcoholic then. I probably am.
When you were 16, Steve, when he was 16 and first played for Middlesex, did they have you marked down as a genuinely fast bowler or an accurate seam bowler?
No.
And which way have you been promoted as you've developed?
It's varied. I mean, you know, various sides you go into, your role within the team will change. So my role within the England team in this last test match, or the last couple of test matches, was to come in and bowl quick. And that's what my role has generally been this year with Middlesex. But previously, when I maybe wasn't as quick, or I definitely wasn't as quick, it was up to me as the youngster to come in as the third or fourth seamer and try and tie an end up almost. And yeah, when I was 16, I was a swing bowler who just tried to bowl accurate areas. I was tall, but I was gangly, and I wasn't quick. And as I've developed a bit more, I've got quicker. I don't do soddle with the ball now, but you know, that's what's happened, and that's a sacrifice that I've had to make for becoming a little bit quicker.
And so, do you think that that's because your body's got stronger? It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think that your body, as you bowl more, I mean, these guys will know more about it than me, but as you bowl more, your body becomes more accustomed to bowling. You get used to just feeling the ball out of your hand, and it almost becomes second nature and natural. The more you bowl, the better you get.
You said that you really didn't think about bowling fast until you were in England and saw Dennis Lilly for the first time. So you bowled at medium pace and just tried in the nets one day to run in and bowl super quick, or was it something that happened over time?
Well, I never wanted to be a fast bowler. My aspirations were all to become a batsman. My two older cousins, who were my heroes, were both test batsmen. So I wanted to be them, but I couldn't get into the team as a batsman. And we didn't have many bowlers, so I got in as a bowler. But I always thought bowling was just a way of getting me into the team, and I'll actually become a batsman. But then when I saw Dennis Lilly bowl, that's really... You see, you need role models. You need, you have natural ability, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll translate it into, into something unless you specifically have a role model. And in my case, it was Dennis Lilly. I just watched him bowl, and that's what I wanted to do. And then once the goal is clear, then the body follows. The more you bowl, the stronger your body gets. And when I look back at my career, I wish I'd done weights. I never did weights in my 20s. Because if you do weights, you actually get stronger, and you can actually even bowl quicker, and you can be fitter.
You preempted my question to Graham, actually, that a lot of time is now spent training. And more recently, I think, strength training. You've just had a period of strength training. Stuart Broad the same, and he looks to have definitely put on a yard or two of pace. Have you ever felt that there's too much training and not enough bowling in nets, or do you think the balance is about right?
I come slightly from the old school. I prefer to bowl. Like all I want to do is I just want to bowl and bowl, and I like to learn me trade from bowling. It's got to a stage, you know, a couple of years ago, where I really had to switch on, had to get into the gym, and I had to, you know, you've got to do like level 12.5 on the bleep test nowadays, and you've got to bench press whatever. And when I first started, I didn't have any of that. I knew that I wanted to bowl quick. I wanted to, I suppose, run in and hit people on the head. That's what attracted me to fast bowling. But nowadays, you have to be fit. You have to be strong. And England are lucky now that they've got, you know, they've got six or seven good quality fast bowlers now that you can take maybe one, maybe two people out of the squad. Get them into some good rehab like Stephen's been, and he'll come back a better player, without a doubt.
But you say six or seven. I think that part of Amy's point, and Tomo might endorse it, is that you're not really fast. You're all medium fast, fast-ish, quick enough. Steve Harmison was certainly fast on his day. Andrew Flintoff could be fast. Do you think that with less cricket, more training, or more attention to the longer form of the game, four-day or five-day cricket, there would be more genuinely fast bowlers playing?
Maybe. I think you're still, when you're a little kid, you still got that ability, whether or not it's to bowl 85 mile an hour or there's 95 mile an hour. And you've still got to, like, I know that I can't bowl 95 mile an hour, whether or not I have a year out and train as hard as I can. I just don't think I'm capable of doing that. My skills come where I bowl on a good day, potentially 90 mile an hour, and I try and use the skills of trying to swing the ball. And I think that's the bottom line.
Let me just say, look, there's one learning skills. Skill learning is only through bowling. You cannot by training and doing anything improve your skills. Skills, there's no shortcut to it. You've actually just like, you know, all great bowlers who have a passion, they end up sort of bowling overs, and in that they begin to experiment, and that's how they develop the skills, whether it's swing bowling or whether it, you know, you move the ball off the wicket. But I'm saying that to keep your fitness and getting extra pace, weights definitely would help, because it's just common sense. If your muscle is stronger, you will be able to, not only will that muscle endure more, given the amount of pressure on a fast bowler's body now with the different forms of cricket, your fitness levels will be better, but I think you will also increase your pace. But it doesn't mean that you cut down on the amount of bowling you do, because you still have to bowl to learn the skills.
How did you train?
My weights vary between half pints and pints. You know what I mean? No, not really. I mean, what Amy says is right. I mean, I wasn't a gym person. I never have been. I hate bloody gyms. I hate people with ripped T-shirts and all this sort of thing, and looking at themselves in the mirror and all that. I hate looking at myself in the mirror at 60-year-old, so I'm not going to go to a gym. I actually, when I left school, I went to work down on the wharves in Sydney. I worked there as a part-time uni student, and what it did for me was I used to load wool bales, and I don't know if anyone in this room, looking at it, is the only thing I have, has pulled a wool bale or a beer keg. Sorry, I'm not, you know. And it's pretty hard, you know, and I was getting paid to do that. Like I said, I don't like gym. I get paid to do all that, and it was just making me stronger and stronger all the time. I was never physically huge or nothing like that, but I was strong, you know, and that's... You don't want to bulk up as a fast bowler. What you want to be is, like Imran said, if you're not strong, get strong. And, you know, you can bowl all day. You know, I don't know, Emmy, I used to play against him. He could bowl all day, and that's right, isn't it? That's what you've got to do. You've got to be... Anybody can bowl good when it's good. You know what I mean? That's very easy. Like the other day at Lord's, you know, wickets were easy to get. It was swinging around and all this sort of thing. But it's when it's hard, that's when you've got to play. That's when you've got to perform. Anybody can do it when it's good. It's when it's hard. It's when you've got to do it.
Okay. Tell us about the fear in batsmen's eyes. Tell us about your opponent and your approach to him as a fast bowler, because it's very rare that John Barkley and I get mentioned in the same breath. But we got it tonight from Imi, and rest assured, we had fear in our eyes. But we fought hard, even if we were indifferent at it. Do you sense in a batsman a weakness just by looking at him, Steve?
Yeah, I think in cricket now, or always, as always in cricket, body language is plays a massive part. So, you know, you look at how people deal with different situations, and it's easy to see whether a batsman, you know, you can see where a batsman's feet are going, if he's moving his feet. You can see you go through another word of him, he turns away and, like, scratches his crease or whatever, and he looks timid, then you know you're on top of him. But then likewise, if you get hit for a four as a bowler and you turn around, you kick the dirt, you know, you curse yourself, your shoulders drop, and you're giving off a bad impression. So cricket at the moment, or as always has been, it is about perception and your perception of the batsman. And as long as you're confident and you feel on top of the batsman, you're in a good place, I think.
You mentioned Viv a lot. I know you felt that Viv Richards was the greatest attacking player you played against, and maybe Sonny Gavaskar the best defensive player. Would they be your top two? Viv didn't wear a helmet, and Sonny only wore the skull cap really quite late in his career. Did helmets change the game for the worse, as far as you're concerned, or the better?
I think helmets did change the game, but for the better. Because, you know, there was World Series cricket. I think Tomo was there too. And there were so many fast bowlers. Never had cricket seen so many fast bowlers in one tournament. And there were about 8 or 9 serious injuries. There were some broken jaws. I mean, people going into hospitals. It was an awful...
But is that because there was so much short pitch bowling? I mean, there's a difference between too much short pitch bowling and great fast bowling, isn't there?
Well, you know, you can have medium paces short pitch bowling, and you'd love that because you can get a lot of runs off them. But when someone fast is bowling a short pitch bowling, there was always short pitch bowling. But it was dependent who bowled those short pitch balls. So if someone bowling at 90 to 95 miles per hour is completely different to someone who's bowling at 85 miles per hour. So in county cricket, when I came in, there was always short pitch bowling. But suddenly, Andy Roberts appeared, and I remember this was in 1974, and we were reading these. He started in second team cricket. And so you read these second team scores. They didn't give details, and they kept saying, Hampshire second team, 300 runs, and playing against Sussex second team, which is 140 for 6 declared. And so you wonder what happened. And then again, so 4 of them would be put in hospital every game. So suddenly this fast bowler came up, and no one, and I remember Colin Cowdery, of course, getting hit by him. And it was all in pictures, you know, you saw, because he used to bowl 2 bounces. One used to amble up. The next ball, he would... One, he used to run and think, you know, it's a normal bouncer. The next, he would just amble up and bowl this bouncer. And before you knew anything, it was, you know, you were hit. And he terrorized county matches. And then followed by Andy Roberts came Joel Garner, Colin Croft, Michael Holding, one after the other. Wayne Daniel. I mean, you saw a cricketer from the West Indies, and he was a fast bowler. And then, of course, you had Lillian Thompson from Australia. Then you had, Richard Hadlee was a match-winning bowler, not express speed, but match-winning bowler. So, you know, Bob Willis, fast.
Wazim Waka Imran.
Came later on.
Malcolm.
And so Malcolm Marshall, I mean, I'm not mentioning him. So there were so many fast bowlers suddenly, whereas in that previous era, you had one fast bowler and he would win your series. And now you had 4 in a team. It had to happen. It was a question of necessity invented the helmets.
And you hit Keith Fletcher on the crown of his cap, or the 3 lines of his cap,
yeah.
And he was caught at cover.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
I thought he hit it. But I should have realised an Englishman wouldn't hit it that far. Yeah, it was remiss of me.
Did you try to hurt people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, seriously, if you can bowl the quickest, I mean, why would I bowl slow balls and all that? I'm serious on that. And you only start doing that towards the end of your career when you lose the pace and a few other things and all that sort of thing. And then you know it's time to get out. But when you're on top, you just bowl quick. And I could see as Steve was saying before, and as Graham and everyone here on the panel would know, except you, because I saw you bowl at Victor Blatt. You've got quicker, I think. But anyway, you did, yeah. And they were just Absolutely nervous. I don't care what you know, in the heyday, you know, when you bowl really, really quick, and nobody likes it, you know, and especially in our day with Imran, myself, and like you said, Wilshere, we didn't have all the gear, you know, all the helmets and all that sort of thing. And as Steve said, when you play now these days, I mean, obviously, if a guy comes out suited up like bloody Sir Lancelot or whatever, you're going to know he's got a faint ticker about short pitch bowling or something like that. But the trouble with cricket these days, we're talking about the spirit of cricket. As Imran said before, the bats get bigger, the ball stays the same, the pitches are flatter, the whole deal, the umpires are better, and the bats are as thick as bloody tree trunks and all that sort of thing, you know. And the fast bowler, he can't bowl short, he's playing on a flat track, he can't do this, he can't do that, you know. It's just crazy.
So
and
up.
People love, I mean, the other day, the good example was the other day when Tate came in, out of the blue, played a few games, came in like a tornado, and everyone loved it. I don't care what you say. Did you all like it? Was that good? Yeah, whether you won or lost, it was good. Well, yeah.
When you were at your absolute best, sadly, there was no speedometer. What do you think you could have bowled at, looking at the speeds of some of the guys now?
Well, they time them out of the hand now, Mark. You should know that. You commentator. It's only just 1.5 metres out of the hand, and the thing spits out the quickest time. It takes about 14 times in that time that spits out the thing. So it's absolute Hollywood. Sorry. you know, but, you know, seriously, you bat down the other end. You don't bat 5 foot in front of a fast bowler, unless you're Derek Randall or something like that, you know. Now, there's a guy that could play fast bowling. Aqua wasn't too bad. He might have been crazy, you know. He was a good player. I like it.
So let's get modern then. If Sean Tate is frequently 95, 96, 97 and touching on 100 mph, what do you think you were at your fastest?
Well, the guy that times them, see, they're timing them without hitting the pitch, right? So the guy told me that a pitch will slow a ball down between 8 and 15%, so let's take a 10% average. So if he's bowling up the other end where we got time, Imran and all the rest of us and all that in the, you know, 90s, 100 or whatever it was. So if it's 100, it's 10 miles less, isn't it? It's 90 mile an hour. So if it's...
If he's 100, you'd be 110.
Yeah, that's what the guy told.
Because Tomo was timed. He's modestly not telling you this, but Tomo was timed. You might have been there, actually. It was during World Series cricket, and they used the method of timing the batsman receiving the ball. What Tomo's saying now is that the speedometer is measured from the hand over the first 1.5 yards that the ball travels, and then the speedometer responds, and you see it on television the minute the keeper takes it, because it's been done in that first yard and a half. Now, when they timed them in 77 or 8...
78.
Yeah.
It's hit the pitch.
It's hit the pitch and got to the batsman, and you were timed at 99.
At the stumps at the other end, yeah.
You were timed at 99.
Yeah, that was in 01. And I was half-charged too. I was banned.
So no adrenaline from being in a match situation either. No. Were you timed then?
Domo was number one, Michael Holding two, and I was number three.
Yeah, Emery was number three, yeah.
There you go.
But we don't know.
Two sling bowlers
in that, Emery.
but I'm sure they should be able to now, with modern technology, use that old footage, and I'm sure they can the speeds right now. I would love to know what all the West Indies used to bowl.
On a bad day, it was scary. I mean, like Emmy said, I mean, you know, we started it off probably the Australians with Dennis and myself, you know, which was nothing compared to the West Indies that came along, like you said. And they had four; they picked four in the side, and then Viv would come on and bowl somewhere in the match. Remember, did you ever get the bat against Viv bowling these off spinners? But you'd sit there and you'd think, God, let me be in when Viv's bowling. And it never happened. You know? And then I had four on the bench that were even worse. Is that right?
No, I'll tell you. I saw Richard Hadley, great player.
Great player.
I remember he came to play a match in Sussex in 1986, and I saw him. He's bowling medium pace, not, you know, just walking around like a zombie. So I said, what's happened to you? He said, you know, Imran, I've just been to the West Indies. So I said, what's the matter? You're a bowler. Why are you behaving like? I'm shell-shocked. As a bowler, he was shell-shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it took him 6 months to recover from it. Look, believe me, it was an experience. Facing those four fast bowlers is, is the rarest experience you could ever go through. As a cricketer, I remember once, Tomo was at his peak, and it was the first test match Pakistan were playing. And this is Adelaide, a slow wicket. So he comes in, he's bowling in, and we watch him ambling up, and suddenly we saw this ball flying. Lily looked sort of very playable compared to him. So two wickets fell immediately, and the batsmen are sort of quite worried how to, you know, we had never seen pace like this. And suddenly, you know, Zahir Abbas tried to hook one, went straight up in the air. Tomo went to catch it. Someone else went. They collided. He dislocated his shoulder. We celebrated in the dressing room.
Thanks for that.
That was the end of Tomo. And then, so, but then we played a World Series match. Now, this is serious. I go into bat, we bowl out the West Indies. I'm playing for the world level, and we bowl them out for 100 runs. So you can imagine how quick the wicket was. We go into bat, and I walk in, I'm number 8 at this time, I walk in at 20 for 6. And I still remember, I went and took my, I went to stand, and I looked at the keeper, I looked at the bowler, I told the umpire to stop. I was trying to calculate how could a ball on one bounce reach the keeper who was standing next to the boundary line. I'm serious. I could not believe that a ball would bounce there and reach that. That's how fast. That was Michael Holding I saw in 2-3. He bowled so quick that we would run to the other end to face Andy Roberts. So when you talk about speeds, I would love to know what those speeds were, because when I watch the, you know, when I watch the speed guns now, I would love to see what Tomo bowled, you know, in 75, when he destroyed England. And I would love to know what Michael Holding bowled in those 4 years, which was something between 76 to 81, when
famous,
he was at his
the famous over at Boycott in Barbados. Oh. That would be, he was fast. I just want to ask you one other thing before I close, with a question to each of you, but just to you, Imran. Just, is there any part of you at any stage felt that West Indies team of 70, of let's say 1980 to 1986, played the game unfairly? You spoke a lot about fairness. Was there any point at which the amount of short pitch bowling was unfair?
Absolutely not. I thought if anything, there was hardly any chatter from there. There was hardly any sledging. I thought the cricketing world, well, England especially, were very unfair to them. I thought in Australia in 1988, Australian cricket was hard. But I suddenly, in 1988, I think I watched a test series in Australia. We were as a one-day team. And the Australian batsmen were petrified. I saw that. I don't know whether you remember that, Tomo, but I remember, Alan Border batting at number 8. He almost was right in the tail, and they were terrorized by the West Indies. And there was this talk about too many bounces. There were talk about the pitch length should be widened, or, you know, it should be, there should be, you know, all this thing came up. And then bounces, over it, everything came up. Somehow, it was thought that the administrators could not understand how to deal with the West Indies phenomena, because it was just an incredible team. It was a freak of history. But to curb them, there were these laws to curb the number of short pitch deliveries, the over rates, because it was supposed to be boring. Michael Holding running so far. Never mind the matches ended in 3 days, but they still wanted the over rates to be quicker, you know, so it would end in 2 days.
These two guys on the end here, who was your hero when you were a boy watching the game?
Growing up, it was pretty regulation for people my age to say Glenn McGrath. And yeah, Glenn McGrath was a massive, just a hero of mine because of the consistency, because one day I'd love to have been able to bowl like him. And yeah, just the way that he controlled the ball and the way that he went about his game and the way he was bit of a hard git on the pitch, and he went hard at batsmen and let people know, and before the series we're going to beat you. I think a famous quote, he said, coming into the series I was thinking 5-0, but now it might only be 4-0 because there's a bit of rain around. like he was fantastic, and I loved listening to him, watch his every move, and yeah, Glenn McGrath was my hero when I was younger.
Good answer, Graham.
Darren Goff, just purely for the way that he played with a smile on his face, and I never realised how quick he was, but he bowled pretty heavy ball at the time, but he, you know, when things were just petering out and things weren't happening, he'd run in with a funny grin on his face and stuff, and I enjoyed that because I think, although fast bowling, it's hard work, you still have to enjoy it, and to me, you know, he really does sum that up.
I'm going to finish with a question to each of you. Who is the opponent who you have played against who you really think can get the better of you? Is there one batsman who you put above all the rest?
Well, my tour, I've not played loads of games for England, and it's been great when I've played. And South Africa tour, we played, I think, at Centurion, and Graham Smith, it was on quite a slow wicket. I didn't feel as though I could bowl a bouncer. And as a fast bowler, once you get in your head that you can't bowl a good bouncer, yeah, you feel as though you're out of the game. And he was literally just batting this far out of his crease and standing and just getting on top of me all the time. So I said, right, I'm going to bounce him. Pulled me for four, and I was thinking, you've lost that part of your armour, really, to try and get him out. And as it happened, I did actually get him out. And now I think to myself, well, no matter how good they are, you've always got that opportunity to get them out. If you put the old saying, if you bowl a good line and length or a challenge the corridor of uncertainty, and those things do come into it. You've got an opportunity to try and get them out. And but without a doubt, come back to the question, I think, obviously, you got the Ricky Pontons, Tendulkar I was lucky enough to play against. But I think the tour to South Africa, Graham Smith, was a pretty tough
really?
Cookie.
Yeah. And when will we see you bowl again? We're concerned about your injury. We'd like you to tour Australia. What's the position?
Yeah, I mean, whether or not Australia's going to come too early, I'm not too sure. But I'm going to be playing in September, if everything goes smoothly. I'm due to be bowling, hopefully, next week. So I've had a little bit of time off at the moment, and you know, fast bowling is hard work, and I think eventually my body just clicked its finger and just said, you know, you've had enough, and it's certainly hard, but I've had a good, I think it's about 5 months off now, nearly coming up to 6 months, and it's been a tough 6 months, but
I just
want to play again. I'm hoping to be playing middle of August and hopefully playing.
Do you watch the game when you're not playing?
Yeah, I do. I find it tough. Actually, the first month when I had my knee operation, I was just lying on the sofa, and that was tough. And then you've got the other period where you get rid of the cast and you want to get out and you want to start running again, but you know that you're actually still 2 months away from playing, and that can be quite a tough part as well. And it's my first serious injury, and I don't wish it on anyone, but I'm hoping that'll make me stronger.
We wish you well soon. We really do. I know that Tammy Meekbauer got stuck in at Lords. In your brief time at the top of the game and also in county cricket, have you met any batsman who you thought had the better of you?
No, I think, yeah, Tammy Meekbauer, he scored a fair few runs against us in that series. He was, yeah, he played fantastically well. And as the guys have said, the wickets get flatter, the ball doesn't do too much. And as the game wears on, you know, the batsman can get on top of you and score lots of runs against you. But I think that in county cricket, someone like, I mean, you guys might not know him, but Chris Rogers at Derbyshire, he just churns out runs for fun once he gets in. He just takes it to you and that's it. You're fielding all day, you know you are. And yeah, in county cricket, you don't have the decision review system or anything like that. So you can have him plumb LBW, not given, keep going, mate, you know, go back to...
If it's any consolation, he gets a lot of runs in the Shield in Australia too. It's not just...
He's in West Australia, mate.
Yeah, well, he's moved now and playing for South Australia, but yeah.
Yeah, he's probably been one of the toughest people that I've ever played.
And of course, you don't get to play against English Test players enough now, do you? So
no, no, you don't play against them too often. But when you do, it's a nice challenge. And
have you bowled at Peterson?
In the nets, yeah, he's nearly scummed me a fair few times. You know, trying to smash him.
Driving him back, has he?
Yeah, I was just coming back from doing the strength and conditioning course, just getting back into bowling and coming through, having a few nice bowl throughs in the nets. And Peterson's practicing before the Oval one day against Australia, and there I'm there. I've bowled a couple of balls. One's hit him in the box. One's hit him in the inside thigh. And he's gone, I can't see where you're bowling it from. Like, I can't see it. I was like, and he was like, no, it's okay. It's fine. You just keep bowling. Next ball comes running down the wicket, smashes it, like goes through past my face here. Flat six. So I was like, I think you saw that one all right, mate.
So taste of your own medicine.
Well, I nearly didn't see the bloody thing. Yeah, it was, yeah. But yeah, bowling at him in the nets is pretty tough.
Clear it up for us. How tall are you?
6 foot 7 and a half.
6'8"-ish.
Yeah.
I like it. Tomo, one batsman. Anybody really get you?
Well, I'll give you the guys I thought were the best batsmen in my time. And that'd be, not in any order, but Viv Richards, the most dynamic. Greg Chappell, I thought was just unbelievable. And Barry Richards, who never got a good run on, but you played with Barry a lot and that, and I just thought Barry was fantastic, you know. Yeah, but those three, I thought. And you throw in your Kabaskas, your Meandads, your Imrans, your Beefies, your all-rounders and all that, and these guys were up there.
OK. Amy?
What?
Viv is your number one?
Look, Viv was, you know, it was a natural gift of God. He was just a genius. He was, his reflexes were far quicker than any other batsman I've seen. So he would get into position, he would be on the front foot and against quick bowlers have the ability to get back and still hook you, you know. And he was a freak. So the sort of shots he could play, I did not see any other batsman play. The sort of positioning and then the mental makeup. He loved challenges,
yeah.
You know. Viv was someone there were a lot of batsmen who were brilliant, were not needed. But Viv was someone, he loved the big occasion. So the bigger the match, the bigger Viv became. And, you know, he loved the big occasions. He scored in the big occasion. His innings were critical. He would sometimes score an innings, and that innings would destroy the opposition. He would get a 60 or 70, but that 70 would demoralize the opposition. I remember once I watched him play against England in 1981, and he had this grudge against Bob Willis. So he goes in, and I remember we are playing county match, so we've got a TV in there, and we're watching everyone. When Viv went into bat, we all watched. And Willis is coming in to bowl to him. And after about a few minutes, 30, 40 minutes, Gordon Greenidge, who actually was, you know him. I mean, Gordon Greenidge was one of the greatest batsmen. He's batting on the other end. He scored 5 runs. Viv Richards, meanwhile, has come in and got 60 runs. And I look at Bob Willis coming into bowl, and I looked at his face, and it was someone from Auschwitz walking back. His face was like that. And he was dropped from the team. Bob Willis was dropped after the test match. He was the... So imagine the damage, the sort of damage Viv would do. That here is your main strike bowler who had previous year won the Ashes or something against Australia in that famous Headingley test match. And here is Viv. He's just completely dismantled him in the first match, first morning of a test series. Willis just fell apart. So that was the power of Viv. It's not the... Forget about what his average is. Forget about the number of runs. It's the way he got those runs. He destroyed the... He took on their main strike bowlers and took them apart. So I did not think anyone came close to him.
Thank you. MCC have created history, really, this year by sponsoring this test series between Pakistan and Australia. And maybe as the MCC continues to search for a role that it's best known for, rather than just as guardians of the laws of the game, this is a marvellous way for the club to go forward. Certainly, I believe it's one of the finest initiatives to have come out of this great club, perhaps ever. And as I say, it's long travelled the world and played against countries that needed good cricket, but now supporting test cricket when it's needed, it's a new way and a fascinating way for the club to go. They're financially supporting as well. The whole of Pakistan cricket and spreading through Pakistan the play hard, play fair message of the spirit of the game. And the other thing the MCC have done conclusively since we were last here is get involved with Chance to Shine. So at grassroots level, this extraordinary initiative between Chance to Shine, other backers and the MCC has introduced Cricket Now. In fact, Chance to Shine recorded its 1 millionth child recently in a 5-year span. £34 million has been raised, and 4,200 schools who were never playing the game before now play it, and more than 1 million children, and the MCC are a part of that, and they're able to spread the message of sportsmanship and competition that I think we're all so keen to see in schools. Above all, We believe that the message of the spirit of cricket is respect. Respect for yourself, for your opponent, and for this great game. Tonight we've heard immortal words, I'd say. We've certainly never seen a more relaxed lecture. It was wonderful to see Imran stand and talk seemingly without notes. It's good for all of us to meet Steve Finn, who's going to be a superstar. We hear that Graham Onions will be back soon. We love seeing the mighty Tomo, but above all, I think, as you applaud all four of them, the master gave us a great night. Imran Khan, ladies and gentlemen. Well done.
You're very good. You talk very well. Brilliant. Brilliant. Well done. Talk brilliantly. Thank you.